This is Tall Boy Radio. Each week, your hosts, Beans, Gaz and Andy, grab a beer and discuss whatever it is that's on our minds. We try to keep things uncomplicated. The premise for this podcast is as simple as we are. Not only can you listen to us at tallboyradio.com and on every podcast platform, you can also watch the video version on YouTube. Just search for Tall Boy Radio or click on the link on our website. If you have a story and want to feature on the show or just want to get in touch, drop us an email at mail@tallboyradio.com or leave us a comment on social media. At Tallboy Radio on Twitter and Facebook, and at Tallboy Radio Podcast on Instagram. Or you can leave us a message on the Anchor app, which we can play on the show. Right, the show is about to begin, so go grab yourself a cold one, kick back, and enjoy. Welcome back to episode 133 of Tallboy Radio. There's no Gaz this week, if I've got my timings right. I believe he is on a flight from New York, landing in McCarran Airport, Las Vegas, as we speak. We're not jealous at all. We're not envious at all. But we are looking forward to hearing a few stories when he does come back, because no doubt there'll be a few when Gaz is involved. So without further ado, I'm going to introduce our only regular host who's with us tonight first. So Andy, say hello, dude. It's been a while, and tell us what it is that you're drinking.
Hello. I had a holiday, but not as glamorous as what Gaz has had. But I've also changed up my beers this week. I got a Love Lane maple syrup stout. It's as black as my heart. Is that all right?
Nice. What percentage is it?
It's not a high one. 7.4, so it's not too bad.
it's not a high one. For Andy, that isn't a high one.
I got Space Paranoids as well. That's 3.7%, that one. So.
Oh, wow.
I might combine the two and make 10.
Yeah, good maths. So, like as I said, so we've got a couple of guests on tonight. I'll tell you what we're going to talk about in a minute, but I'll tell you what beer I'm drinking first before I introduce those two guys. This is from one of my holidays that I had earlier in the year that I picked up, and it's a Cotswold Lakes Cotswold Blonde. It's about 5.8%. It's not too bad, to be honest with you. It's not one of my favorite types of beers, but I have got another one to have later, which I had one earlier. I sent Andy a picture of it, and it is a Mole Imperial Stout. So it's 10% and it's flavored with chili, and it does pack one heck of a punch. I'll save that. I might not get to that later. But two people who we'll get to right now as our two guests that we have tonight. So you'll remember Dave from when he was on before a few times.
Say hi, everyone. I've got a Titanic Plum Porter, and to follow that, I've got a Bishop's Finger to have a go at.
No way, you have. Could have done with that one last week. So, have you tried the Cherry Porter yet? The Titanic Cherry Porter?
Because the only time I think about it is when you mention it, but I'll try.
It's a good one. It's not as good as the Plum Porter, but actually, yeah, it's a fairly, fairly decent beer. And then finally, we actually have had Mark on before talking about a very similar subject a little bit. So Mark makes regular appearances on the Railway Men podcast. So do you want to say hello, Mark?
Good evening, everybody. No alcohol for me, I'm afraid. I've just taken ownership of an eight-week-old puppy. I can't be drinking. I need to be awake to be cleaning him up and playing with him at 2 and 3 in the morning.
I don't envy that at all. So, yeah, so do you want to tell us a little bit about this puppy then for our listeners? What type of breed and what have you?
Yeah, his name's Gizmo. I'll see if I can find him for you in a minute. He is a Jack Russell his mum's crossed with a cockapoo. His dad's a pure Jack Russell. I was unfortunate enough to lose my last dog, Zach. He's here now. About 9 years ago, and he was 16, and it was horrible, horrible thing to go through. And it's taken me this long to decide whether to do it again.
Yeah.
Just on the back of that, but I decided I'm robbing myself of the good years just by not wanting to, you know, to try and avoid a sad end. So I thought about it for a long time, and then a friend of mine who lives, it's like a little farm, she's just had puppies, and she asked me to go and see him, which was a big mistake, because as soon as I clapped eyes on him, it was like, well, one of them's coming, there he is, and if we see him.
There you go, he's a cute little fella.
But I had this, it's a bit of a cliche, but people always say, let the dog choose you. So I did, I sat back and he came and climbed on me and lay down on me. And so here he is.
Nice. That's nice, dude. And like I said, you can tell why he's called Gizmo there. He does look like the old Mogwai from the film The Gremlins.
Yeah, it was the brown eye, white eye. I picked him up and That's what came into me first, so it stuck. But I've had all sorts of suggestions that have been better since. But he was registered as Gizmo quite quick, so it's he's stuck with it now.
Ah, oh, cool. Did they have Kennel Lane then as well? Did they get Kennel Lanes as well? What was his? Did they give
him? Yeah, it's something Gizmo. I forget what it is now. But yes, they do. When he's, they have to be registered now because he's chipped. They have a microchip and stuff. So if he, God forbid, he ever goes missing, he's got every chance of coming back to me.
Yeah.
We were away at the weekend with some friends in Norfolk, and they've got three cats, live in the middle of nowhere. They've got three cats, and they've got a stray cat that doesn't come into the house because the other cats don't like it. And they were trying to make us take it away with us, give it a good home. Two reasons I didn't. One, I don't want a cat, and another, they called it Dave.
That's a cool name for a cat, Dave.
Yeah, but imagine that around our house. Dave, stop weeing on the fence.
Yeah, and the cat as well.
Exactly.
Sometimes, you know, they find that these so-called stray cats have actually got a home and food somewhere else, and they just like getting fed twice and looked after twice.
It's always worth it for me.
It's possible they live literally, there's things, four houses like within about a mile, so it's unlikely. It's probably properly lost.
So we're not actually here to talk about pets, but we did want to meet Gizmo a little bit because he is a cute little fella, unlike Dave, the cat. So we obviously we're starting off now the football season. We've done a few episodes on football before, so we've got a little bit of a unique experience really, because Mark is a fan of Crewe Alexandra, as we found out last time, which is in the lower league, so we can get that perspective as well, looking at the season ahead for Crewe. They had an interesting season last year, interesting season coming up this year. And then, well, actually Dave and Andy are both Man United fans, so they can bicker out as to their opinions about what's going to happen to them with their new manager coming forward. Myself, as an Arsenal fan, obviously we've got a very exciting year coming up ahead of us. Some new signings brought in, and we've got a very, very good chance of winning something next year, if I do say so myself. There's no Gaz, so we can pan Everton as much as we like, and all he can do is listen to it when he comes back off his holidays. He'll no doubt retort a little bit in the following episode, but I think if we're honest, he'll agree with how poor a side they actually are.
They're in the Championship now. Did they get relegated in the end?
They narrowly avoided it. To be fair, actually, I think we talked about this, actually, Mark, didn't we, the last time you were on? It was quite exciting watching in Everton when they were getting results against Chelsea towards the end of the season, and a few games like that. That was probably the most interesting part of the season, really, because Man City and Liverpool was fairly dull at the top. They just kept winning and winning and winning, and you know, it was always going to be going the way that it went. But I thought, again, last year, the most exciting part was what was going on at the bottom end of the table. You know, and maybe that's something that United can experience this year and bring some excitement to us all. But first, Mark, do you want to tell us a little bit then, just for ourselves, as you know, obviously the three of us all support teams that have been pretty much ever present in the Premier League and have been in top flight football more often than they haven't, certainly with Arsenal, the only side that's never been relegated. Do you want to tell us just some experiences for yourself of football in the lower leagues and just some of your experiences following Crewe all these years?
Yeah, it's been 35 years now. And as I told you on the last podcast, it came about because my mates were already going when I was at school, and then they kept pestering me to go along, and I wasn't really interested at first, and then I did and got the what I call the bug. But I've been brought up on lower league football, so I've got a real soft spot for the sort of older grounds and the little grounds like Accrington. And when I go to, you know, don't get me wrong, when I've been to Wembley, I've been to the new one twice with Crewe and the old one twice with Crewe, and they're amazing. The new grounds are amazing, but they're all very much the same to me. They're like big concrete bowls with no character. You know, you've been in one and you've been in them all. I'm more of a fan of the sort of stand on top of the pitch, and all the stands are different sizes and some are wood, and you know, in the league that we're in now, some of them are still standing. I was at Rochdale on Saturday, and the stand behind the goal still terracing. But I think that's because that's all I know, or all I knew for a long time. And of course, like living in Alsager, I've seen Luke Murphy, Lee Bell, Ryan Wintle, Sean Miller, that have all played for Crewe. Like Belly's the assistant manager now. you know, and I walk past him in Asda and stop and have a talk to him, and I don't think, I mean, I might be wrong, but I'm guessing you don't get that so much with the higher place clubs. You know, on a Saturday, I like seeing the kids go and stand by the tunnel, and the players will high five them going off and stop and sign autographs and stuff. And then, you know, you see Sky where the kids have got at Old Trafford and Arsenal, they've got pieces of cardboard asking for shirts and stuff. And you never get that intimacy. You know, the top players are absolute superstars and live on almost a different planet. So I think that's just my experience because that's what I grew up on. Maybe if I'd been taken to Old Trafford first, then it would be different. But yeah, I wouldn't change it now. I couldn't change it. You know, it's what I'm used to.
Well, we'd be grateful for small mercies you weren't taking to Old Trafford. So what about you two guys? What about you two guys then as Man United fans? Andy, you're probably closer to Stockport County now. Have you ever been tempted to go and watch one of their games?
Yeah, I've been to the stadium twice, both for drink festivals.
I should have known.
But when my kid's older, I'll probably take him to Stockport now they're in the League Two. It's not a bad stadium. Yeah, it's only like 10, 15 minutes away from here. So, yeah, I'll take the lad down when he's a bit older. Quite a while away, yeah, I think.
Yeah. Well, funnily enough, my brother, he takes his lad. He's just got season tickets at Crewe. He was round, dropped a birthday present off me from actually the other day. And he dropped him and his lad turn up, both wearing Crewe shirts. You'll be pleased to. And I wish I could remember the name that Ben had on the back of his shirt. But it was a young Welsh lad. You'll know.
Oh, Zach Williams.
It could be. Could be. I can't remember. Yeah, he's got a young Welsh lad on the back. So I thought fair play to him because he's got the representative of Wales. So yourself, Dave, have you been to Old Trafford a few times? Have you watched the game?
I've been once. I'm a proper United fan.
When once for a prawn sandwich.
I went once when I was probably about 14, 15, something like that. But yeah, never since. I'm an armchair fan, really. I've watched Crewe. We take the kids to watch Crewe 2-3 times a season. When the kids are in primary school, we used to get free tickets from the teachers, but we also take them to Crewe. And the kids, you know, they watch Crewe. Albert wants me to take him to Old Trafford, but I keep taking him to Crewe instead. And one in the girls' team, my coach, there's at least one of the girls that plays in the Crewe development squad at the soccer centre as well in Shavington. So I've got more ties with Crewe than I have with Man United.
Fair play. That's interesting. And I'll be honest with you, have I been to Cresty Road? I don't think I have. I've been to watch Macclesfield Town a few times because I used to manage a store right next door to it. So I've been to watch Macktown a few times when they were in League Two. But I think Wickham Wanderers is the side that I saw that play there, and I forget the others. But their supporters, I tell you what, I say supporters loosely, because most of the time the home fans were chanting Mack, you're crap. I'm not going to take anything away from them. They were. It was a very painful game to sit through.
But, was that before they went bust?
Oh, yeah. I think this was probably the last few days of Sammy McIlroy when he was there. So we're talking a good long while ago. It's 2005, I think, was when I left that store. And I used to watch them, you know, probably early 2000s when I watched Macclesfield Town a few times.
Proper old ground, Macclesfield, I like going there.
Yeah, it is. And I tell you what, it got a bit tasty when West Ham played there. You know, we had to close up the shop because, yeah, it got a little bit tasty. It did. And that's the interesting thing about English football. We had a guy on from Los Angeles called Mega Man, Stephen Martinez, and he's a big football fan, follows the Galaxy. And he was blown away by some of the stuff that we were talking about. And obviously he had seen the football violence from the 1970s and stuff like that, found that very difficult to believe. But then again, the other stuff he found difficult to believe was the fact that we had relegation, something you don't see in American sports. I think we talked about last time, actually, Mark, didn't we? That sort of thing.
Yeah.
So speaking of relegation, so Crewe season last year. Yeah. How was that for you?
That's comfortably the worst one I've ever seen. In 35 years, we got off to a horrendous start. We signed. I mean, it's difficult to talk about now without laughing, but it wasn't funny at the time. And like you two guys don't know, so you know it's going to sound ridiculous. But the manager signed two players that both decided to retire a week before the season started. I mean, It sounds ridiculous. One decided that he was going to be an accountant and just completely changed careers and did, and is still an accountant as far as I know. And the other one, to be fair to the other one, Sean McDonald, his wife had just had a baby and he wanted to be at home a bit more, and she wanted him at home. And he did carry on playing, but he went part-time. So that set us back straight away, because obviously all the clubs had signed the half-decent players at that stage, and we were left picking up what was left, and we got off to a horrible start, and then there was contract wrangles. And to be honest, we were as good as relegated by Christmas, but they didn't choose to act on it and change the manager out until four games before the end. But by the end, I was numb, you know. I was going more out of habit than anything else. You know, I'd long stopped caring that they were losing. It was just a matter of turning up, watching how many they lose by, and then coming back. And obviously the biggest thing this season is making sure there's no hangover from that, because I think losing becomes a mentality and it's something that becomes harder to address the longer it goes on. So it was good that we got off to a decent start on Saturday. But yeah, it was a hard season last year.
I watched them twice and they won both times, so I was quite happy.
I'll buy you a season ticket. I'll pay for it.
So how are they going to do this year then? Are they going to be better? Obviously, the last thing you want to see them relegate out of League Two, that would be unthinkable. So what sort of season are you forecasting for them this year?
I was asked this a couple of weeks ago, and the most honest answer I could give was, for the first time in all those years, I'm going into a season not really sure what to expect. There's a different manager in charge, and he signed 8 new players, one from Arsenal, funny enough. We'll talk about him in a minute, goalkeeper. Yeah. But I really have no idea what to expect. Obviously, it was huge to get a win on Saturday because of what I've just said, the hangover from last year. And they did all right. First off, they were, you know, it was by far and away better than I could have ever expected. But then in the second half, they were 2-0 up at half time. And in the second half, it was Rochdale's first game and they're at home, and they were always going to come out and throw caution to the wind a bit because they got nothing to lose by then. And they did. And they got one back. And then the last 20 minutes, I aged about 10 years in the last 20 minutes, but they managed to get away with a win. So again, I'll know better after about 10 games, I think. But for me, I think anything from halfway upwards would be a good season. I think it's going to be more of a transitional season. But then again, if you listen to the manager talk and the chairman, they're hoping to be pushing to go straight back up. So one of us will be right and one of us will be wrong.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see which. And what about you two guys then? Man United then, obviously, big change there at the top. Ten Hag's come in as manager. Let's face it, United, one of the biggest clubs in the world, one of the most financially successful clubs in the world, if not the most financially successful club in the world. And they've underperformed recently. What can we expect from them this year?
We beat Liverpool 4-0 in the preseason, so it's our league. Nah, top five I'll be happy with. I did make a list of top 7 or 8, and I think United will be in there somewhere, but it kind of go up from last season. It was shocking. We were second the year before, brought in like a few missing pieces, and all of a sudden we're, you know, getting beat by like Arsenal and all this other rubbish.
Dear, oh dear.
What do you think of Ronaldo, Andy?
When he signed, I thought he's going to be the one that all the youngsters are going to look up to and bring this like air of professionalism and training and ethos and all sort of stuff, and everyone's just going to lift the game up. But sort of had the opposite effect. If he goes, I don't mind him going, because he's like in his twilight years. He wants to break some more records, and you know, fair play to him. But I think we've got enough youngsters now to not really. I think we'll miss some of his goals, but I think we've got other players that can make that up now. Like Sancho looks like he's going to hit form a season. We've got Fred doing some worldies from like outside the box. So yeah, as long as he don't go to the Premier League club, I don't mind. He can go to Crewe.
Yes, I need to go Crewe.
I was going to ask you though, how do you feel? Because it's like it's a world that I'm not familiar with, and I don't understand. So Crewe's top earner, I think, is on about £1,900 a week, and then I read the sort of the news this week and see that Ronaldo's been asked if he can be bought out of his final year because he doesn't want to be at United anymore. Like, how do you feel about that as fans, because I just read it and think, but I can't comprehend it. I don't understand it. You know, for me, like, the chance of playing for Man United is the odds are so massive that you think it's his second spell and there'll be reasons for it, but it's like an honour, isn't it, to play for United? So what's going on as he wants to leave?
He wants Champions League football, doesn't he? He's got like the most, I don't know about most appearances, but he's got like most goals and stuff. So I think he just wants to, you know, ferment that a bit while Messi's still going. He thinks he probably just wants to get a few more seasons in him. But he's on like, is it $500,000 a week? I don't know about now because of the pay cut of missing out on Champions League football, but that's probably like a fraction of what he earns from sponsors and stuff like that.
Yeah.
But I don't know. I think to me, United are like, you know, like you say, one of the highest earning teams, at least. Whether they're the biggest team anymore, I don't know. But if he wants, I think he's earned that sort of thing of, you know, if he goes, he goes. He's an old player. And if it was like Scholesy or something like that, you know, you sort of want them to retire with the club. But Ronaldo's not had that. Not loyalty, but I don't think he's got that. An English club ain't where he's going to retire. It's going to be like, you know, maybe it's going to be Sporting Lisbon again, or maybe a Spanish team or something like that. So I'm not bothered if he goes, to be honest. Yeah, I don't know. I don't know what Dave's opinion is on it as well.
It's pretty similar to yours, really. I think, you know, he's a pretty special player when he's on form and the team is set up to work with him. And I think that was part of the problem last season, was that, you know, the style of football that the manager wanted didn't necessarily suit his game, and that just made it difficult. And then, you know, there's always a lot of drama. I mean, he comes off the pitch and he's not happy. Well, why would you be happy? And then everything just, you know, it just, you know, the media and everything else just talks about it being trouble, and then it just starts to spiral and the results don't go well and everything's on Ronaldo. It's all his fault. He won't do this. He's unhappy. And you can see how it could be quite easy for a dressing room, even of, you know, at Manchester United, where they, amongst themselves, they lose the confidence, they lose the cohesion and the team spirit. And that makes the games. And no matter what the manager can do, I think once that starts to happen, it becomes very, very difficult to hold it together and get a series of results. And I don't know what Egg? What's his first name? It's not Egg, is it?
I don't think he's Egg now. I don't think he's Egg. Eric Ten Hag.
Eric, there we go.
Egg.
Egg, for sure.
Yeah,
if he's got his style of play, and if he thinks that Ronaldo can play in that team, and if Ronaldo wanted to play in that team, if those three things, you know, worked together, then I think he could be a massive asset for another season. But if either he doesn't see Ronaldo in that team as a regular, or Ronaldo doesn't want to play that style of football, then he will leave. But at the moment, he seems to be, nobody wants him. And whether that's just because of cost, or he's being very choosy about where he wants to go, and those clubs aren't coming in for him, or it's all a load of nonsense, and he's quite happy where he is, and he wants to play for another season. Because some people, you know, rightly or wrongly, get fed up having to deny everything in the press. So say, well, I'm not gonna come out and deny it. I'm not gonna give you the lines to put in your paper by coming out and denying it. Why would I? And they're quite happy to let the media write all the lies and nonsense without actually, you know, joining in with their game. And he might just be doing that because he's not said he wants to leave.
Well, this is the thing. Pogba got very heavily criticised, hasn't he? He's another player who's had an awful lot of stick. And I said to my brother-in-law, and my brother, you know, I won't give too many stuff away about the stuff that he does say to me, obviously, because he doesn't say very much. But he was a coach at Man United up until the summer when he's moved on. He's now a coach with England. And I said to him, Matt Pogba, I tell you what, it looks to me like when you read in the papers, you need to ship him out because he seems to be ruining the spirit in the dressing room. He says, it's absolutely untrue. That is literally just paper talk. Everyone at Man United absolutely loves Paul Pogba because of how hard he works in training and all the stuff that he does that you just do not see. And then the papers will just pick up on this one thing. And if he doesn't address it, then they'll stick to it and they'll keep on and on and on. And he said, none of it is true. He is a lovely lad and he's absolutely loved at that club. And I thought that's quite an interesting perspective, really. Now, I've never spoke to him. Well, I've spoken to him a few things about Ronaldo because obviously I'm fascinated by that kind of stuff. And that's the interesting thing as a fan. I'll take this on somewhere else, actually. But when you're a fan, you have a very different opinion than when you're actually a professional at the club and doing it. So Mark said there, 1900 quid is what the top player is on a cruise. So if someone came in and said to your top player, £1,900, we'll double your wages to come and play, you know, at one of the other clubs, I don't know, Preston North End or somewhere like that, in the, you know, that aren't a million miles away. As a fan yourself, you know, I mean, if I ever play for Arsenal, you know, don't get me wrong, they took Pascal Sagan, so they might take me yet. You never know. You know, you could pay me a pittance and I'd turn out for Arsenal and still put in the poor performances that a man of my ability would. But I wouldn't leave anywhere. I wouldn't leave to play for anywhere else for any kind of money. So it's one of those things that we get frustrated that the players are obsessed with money and that we think that they're mercenaries. But in reality, they are professionals earning a living for their family, aren't they? And although the money at the level that we support it is ridiculous. You know what I mean? When you're talking to Ronaldo, £500,000 a week is absolutely insane. There's no way that you could warrant that. When you actually look at all the problems in the world in terms of homelessness and people who can't put food on a table or pay their energy bills, and yet we're giving £500,000 to a guy who sulks every time he comes off the pitch, it doesn't make any sense in reality. But yeah, these guys have the opportunity to earn that money. So why wouldn't they? Do you know what I mean?
I think that's the problem that footballers face. There's three things, I guess. Is one is they're just doing a job, you know. And there's a lot of footballers that see it like that as well. You know, you think of people like Paul Scholes, who didn't want the limelight. All they wanted to do was do his job, play football. And there's a lot of footballers like that, and they have an enormous amount of pressure put on them. When people talk about their wages, well, they negotiate contracts the same as any of us do. When we go for a job or we negotiate a pay rise, we balance off our enjoyment of our job and what we want to do as a career and the salary we get. And sometimes you might do a job you enjoy for less money. Other times you might do a job you don't enjoy for more money. So footballers are no different in that respect. It's just that at the higher level of the game, and you are talking about an absolute tiny, tiny number of working adults that are in that sphere, they get an enormous amount of stick. And then the other side of that coin is that they then get held up as role models quite often when they don't want to be. So, oh, you can't do that. You can't behave like that. You can't do this, that, the other. You're a role model. Well, no, I'm just a footballer. I didn't ask to be a role model. And then you get all the media pressure on the side of that. Now, if you're somebody that makes your living on top of football by being in the media, so your top celebrities that want the media press, want to have the hello photo shoot of their weddings, want to be sponsored by Ferrari and the expensive watches and all of that, then that's fair game. But if you just want to actually play your football and earn a decent wage, I think a lot of them get a really bad rep from the media and society in general, because people in general jump onto that bandwagon, oh, ridiculous money. But, you know, who wouldn't if you could?
I think you're absolutely right, by the way. If you were to describe supporting a football club to anyone and broke it down into its simplest form, but didn't explain that it was football, they would tell you that you were talking about a cult. And that's essentially what following. It's like a cult following. I mean, on Saturday, for example, I was on three or four different trains and then tram, and it was sweltering hot and I was sweating and I had to stand up on all the trains because they were rammed and there was other football fans on there. And I said to one of my friends, like, there's nothing else I would do this for. If I knew I'd got to go and stand on sweaty trains and travel up and down the country, I'd be like, nah, you're all right, I'll stay at home. And yet I'd do it willingly. And it's because that it football's got that cult following that it's been allowed to grow into the monster, I suppose, that it is. And the players are allowed to command such ridiculous fees. I don't blame them at all. We've all said it. You've just said it, Adam. Like, if somebody offered you a fraction of that to do your job, you would take it.
Yeah.
The difference, I think, is football fans have a real emotional attachment to a football club, and it can be for all sorts of reasons. You know, on our last podcast, you heard me talk about how Crewe have helped me with my mental health when I've struggled. And it's something that supporting Crewe is a big thing for me. And I know it is for thousands of football fans, if not millions across the globe. And it might be that your granddad supported them and it's a family thing. But a footballer essentially doesn't have that emotional attachment. I'm not saying all of them don't. There'll be, you know, Rooney was obviously very attached to Everton. And I think Ronaldo has got a real soft spot for certainly Sir Alex, if not United, the football club. So there's some emotional attachment, but by and large, it's a contract negotiation, and they will go and take as much money that they can get, because it's, you know, in the grand scheme of a lifespan, it's a relatively short career. You're talking, I don't know, 32, 33, and you're coming to the end of it. And I think that's no secret. And players will take as much as they can possibly get while they can get it. So I'm not saying I agree with the wages, but I'm not going to ever knock a footballer for taking them. If, no. You know, I think the money could be better spent elsewhere, but that's not my decision. You know, I don't negotiate these contracts with BT Sport and Sky. What I do think is that the TV companies and the executive side sort of control a bit too much of football now than I would like, than they used to. But again, that's for other people to decide. I'm used to my lower league 3 o'clock kickoffs on a Saturday afternoon, you know, not 12:30 on a Sunday, having had to travel from, I don't know, London to Newcastle just to accommodate a TV channel. But of course, the TV channel will say, well, we're the reason that you can sign these players because we pay you such vast amounts of money. So there's all things to consider. It's not as black and white as they earn too much and they shouldn't. It's not as simple as that.
No, you're spot on there, and that's very interesting. But it must, there is such a gulf now between League Two, as you sort of said, with the wages of those guys are on, and just and the wages that they pay is all well and good, but the money coming in, you know, for the likes of Crewe Alexandra and clubs in League Two, compared to what the Premier League club, even if you're at the tail end of that club, you're only going to get a few games on Sky. You don't have to get so many games, but you know you're going to be, they're going to show the game when you play the Arsenal and Man United and games like that. But the gulf between the two is insurmountable now. That's there, and I don't think that can ever be overcome. And that's interesting. One thing that I'd like to ask you guys about, just in terms of your opinion. And it wouldn't work so well in English football, but in American football, which myself and Andy and Gaz are big fans of, there's a salary cap. So each club who's playing in the NFL, they can only pay the same amount of wages. So you've got a set amount to pay out your wages. And if you want the big stars and you want to pay the big money to them, well, then guess what? You've got to take those cuts elsewhere. So, you know, and this is the interesting thing about Tom Brady. Everybody talks about Tom Brady as the greatest quarterback that's ever played the game. But he's probably, I think he's about the 28th or 29th best paid quarterback in the league. Not just now, but just consistently. He's never taken the big money because he recognizes by not taking the money, then he can have those wide receivers around him. He's got the blockers in front of him. He's got the tight ends that can do the work for him when he's had Gronk. That these are the guys that then can earn the money and he can be part of the best team. And that's quite rare in American football. We've seen players like Le'Veon Bell for the Steelers who've just gone out and moved because they wanted more money and got the exit out of the Steelers. And now he is nowhere. He's in no man's land because it worked for him in Pittsburgh. It didn't work in New York. It didn't work in Kansas. How do you think that would work? Is that something you'd like to see in the Premier League? So a wage cap so that each club can only pay, because you look at the likes of Man City at the moment and their finances that they've got, they can literally point their finger at anybody they want in the world and say, go get him, because we can afford to pay whatever they want.
Financial fair play is supposed to be, isn't it? You can only spend what you earn. But people like, well, City have made a mockery of that with their shirt sponsor, but Barcelona over this summer have been insane. Like, you know, have made all their players take 50% pay cut or some degree of a pay cut. Then they're buying in all these new players, but then they're not willing to, you know, pay their players what they've earned, sort of thing. So the financial fair play is supposed to be the salary cap, but I don't know. I think there's a few bits we could take from American football, like, you know, like all the teams have one shirt manufacturer, stuff like that. Yeah, that's my two cents.
I think what the problem would be is, you've alluded to it there, I'm no financial expert, far from it, but I think on one hand, you'd have the PFA who are on the side of the players that would say it was some kind of discrimination, that the players should be allowed to earn whatever they want, and that seems quite right. And the clubs will also try and get around it by using sponsorship deals. So it's like they'll sit within a salary cap if there was one, but then negotiate into the contract, but we'll get you a deal with Nike who can sponsor your boots, and that's worth I don't know how many million to try and boost it up. So I'm not sure it would just be as black and white as saying you can only pay this much towards wages. I think my granddad, bless him, he's dead and gone now, but he used to say that he'd love to see some of the top managers come and work at Crewe and see how they managed and had to cope with selling some of the best players. And it's an interesting thought, you know, are Guardiola and Klopp the two best managers, or have they just got the most money and most resources at the fingertips? It's an age-old argument, isn't it? I don't know. There is too much money at the top end, but how you remedy that, I don't know. Certainly, from my point of view, not enough of it filters down. I don't think it's distributed fairly, not at all.
I think that the principle of a salary cap is very good, and it would allow the money to ripple down. The problem and why it wouldn't work is that unless every league in the world applied it, all the best players wouldn't be playing in this country. Yeah. But if every league applied the same thing and it was all pegged against the US dollar or pound sterling or whatever, so the exchange rate, so it was all level pegging across the board, I think it'd work very well, because you could still have players earning £5 million a year, but you wouldn't have, you know, six or seven or eight players in the top 25 clubs in the country earning 10, 15 million pounds a year.
One of the things we see as well, players going on loan. So, you know what I mean? So we've got the likes of Arthur Okwonkwo, if that's how I pronounce his name correctly. I hope
no
I
idea.
Have.
Sounds right.
That's it. And so he's gone on loan from the mighty, mighty Arsenal down to Crewe Alexandria, is the goalkeeper that you mentioned earlier. And that's always an interesting thing when players go on loan and end up playing elsewhere and getting some fantastic experience. And we've used it, and hopefully, you know, we'll see it this year with William Saliba, who's come back to the club after 2 years on loan, never kicked a ball for us, and has looked absolutely phenomenal in pre-season. So hopefully Okwonkwo is another one of those players who's going to go and get some experience and end up coming back to us. You know, the danger is obviously then gets sold on after enjoying his time there. But is he going to play regularly for you guys?
Yeah, I think it's, I mean, they'll never come out and publicly say this, but I think it's almost written into the deal that he, if he's fit, he plays. Just to give you a comparison, I can't tell you where I know this from because I don't want to, but it's on really good authority that he's actually earns for Arsenal 15 grand a week, and Crewe are paying the whopping sum of 400 towards that. So that just goes to show you the gulf and he's not kicked a ball for Arsenal's first team. And from what the reports were, he's nowhere near it. He's expected to play for you. I mean, I've only seen him on Saturday. He's 6 foot six. He's a giant. He looks the most laid back person on the planet, but you know, there's no way that we could facilitate that kind of deal without a massive helping hand from Arsenal. So there's that huge gulf. But yes, he is going to play, and it will do him the world of good. But for a club that relies on finding young players and improves them and sells them, it's become ridiculously difficult now, because the likes of Arsenal and United and even Stoke up the road, the really top clubs, City, Liverpool, they snaffle up all the best talent across the country, if not the world. And clubs like Crewe are left with whatever's left. And you know, last year, for example, there was an unnamed Premier League club that tried to sign one of our players, Zach Williams, before he played for Crewe's first team. And he was going to be something like 14th choice left back at that football club. You know, how on earth are we supposed to compete with that? Now, luckily, he had the presence of mind, and his parents did, to say, no, I think we're best off staying where we are. But it shows that the level that you're up against, if all the top clubs can just buy all the best talent and sign it up from, I don't know, 5, 6, 7, 8 years old.
Well, I think it's worse than that, isn't it, Mark? Because I think what's different, perhaps, when you had the Crewe with people like Platt and all those kind of players, is that you can sign your professional contracts when you're 16, and it could be a 4-year deal when you're 21 or 20. If you're a quality player, you just let your contract run down and you get snapped up with a signing on fee, and then the club gets nothing or very little as compensation, despite them being with you for 10 years. They built you, or 15 years, they built you up, they've given you a professional contract, and then you've just gone for a signing on fee of 200 grand and 5 grand a week somewhere else, and you get nothing.
That's absolutely right. And if they leave before 24, the club's entitled to compensation, but in comparison to what we might have made from a sale or even success if we'd gone up a league, the compensation is usually minimal. It doesn't favour the club that's put all, you're quite right, that's put all the work in. And it's becoming more and more difficult now to get round, because the younger players have all got agents now. They've got agents from the age of six. And we've just seen Harry Pickering, who went to Blackburn from Crewe. Charlie Kirk went to Charlton. Perry NG went to Cardiff. And they'd all got release clauses in that on the day that they signed the contract, so we're left back in League One. Well, he was in League Two at the time, Harry Pickering, when he signed that. £600,000 release clause on that day seemed quite good. But fast forward 2 years, he's playing a league higher. He's clearly one of the best left backs in that league and is probably going to play in the Premier League. £600,000 is nowhere near his value. No. So we have to, we're forced then to accept the release clause that's been put in. So I know that Crewe at the moment are trying to formulate a system whereby as the value increases and the number of appearances increases, the release clause goes up to match that. But it's really difficult. The days of producing sort of Dean Ashtons and selling them for £3 million, they're long gone. And it makes me worry about the future. Eventually, I think if we're not careful, we'll have a Premier League and maybe the Championship. And the rest of the leagues will be made up basically of loan players from all those clubs. And that's not how it's supposed to be at all. That's not English football.
No, they can't. Chelsea have done that on their own, haven't they? They've like, is it 50 or 60 players on loan every year? It's just like an insane number.
Like, that is incredible. That's an incredible statistic, that, isn't it? 50 or 60. You know, they could fill like several first teams just on players that they have out on loan. One thing I think we do need to talk about on this episode as well, because we're talking about men's football, and actually we've just talked about football. You know, we've not acknowledged that what we're actually talking about really is men's football. And actually, something's happened really, really recently that's really put women's football on the map in England. Don't get me wrong. It's been there for a few years. It's been in the background. You know, we're talking professional leagues now and professional teams. But just recently, you know, football has come home, hasn't it? What has your guys' opinions been on that? How much of it have you watched? I know, Dave, you've got a vested interest in this, given your level of interest in, you know, coaching with the women's game at a very, very sort of young stage. But, you know, tell me a bit about everybody, just your opinions on that and everything that you've seen just recently.
I think I've watched quite a few of the games and definitely watched the final. The quality of the women's game over the last 3 or 4 years has just it's accelerated massively, and the technical quality of the England team wouldn't put a technical side, not a physical strength or speed. I know we've had these conversations in another episode, but the technical and tactical abilities they're not a million miles off the sort of Premiership, Championship football. It's that good. It's the strength and speed which would be the difference between the men's game and the women's game. But what they've done to win that is just amazing. And you Ian Wright, who I don't know if you've heard of him, Adam.
I'm familiar with Ian Wright, yes.
The thing he said on the interview about hopefully now girls can play football in PE at school. And Alice, my daughter, who coaches with the girls' team with me, she's frustrated that through school, after I think in the first year seven or year one, depending on how old you are, they could do football. But after that, the girls weren't allowed to do football.
Is that right?
Yeah. Girls have to do netball. Girls can't do basketball. There's a few things like that, but football as well. They separate them so they can't play together. My team, under 10s, we play in a boys. It's a mixed league, but it's 99% boys, with the exception of our team, which is all girls. And we compete down there. We had a competition at Macclesfield Town, actually. Talking to Macclesfield earlier, a few weeks ago, it was an all-girls tournament. It's the first time my team had played against girls competitively. And we got a 0-0, a 4-0 win, a 0-0, a 0-0, and then lost 1-0 in the quarterfinal, which was a bit gutting, but it was pretty amazing. And these girls love their football. And watching the England team just inspires them no end. We at All Sage, at AFC All Sage, we also run a Wildcat session, which is just open to all girls, not necessarily signed up to a team. And we're expecting, we normally have 50 to 60 girls coming down on a Monday night, and we're expecting that number to be bigger when we start back in September than last season, because of the momentum because of what's going on with the England women's team.
Yeah, fair play. What about yourself, Andy? Did you watch? Do you watch much of the game or other games?
Not this year. I probably watch women's football every tournament they do, like the World Cups and Euros, for the last 4 or 5 years. But I've just not watched any this season or this Euro campaign. I don't know why. I think I've just been busy. But you can see the progression every year. Like, it does get bigger and bigger. And I think they had like world record attendances, didn't they? This Euros is like 80,000 for some games and stuff.
It's incredible, isn't it?
I'm not sure. So it's good. But I've not watched it this year. I'm addicted to football, so I'll watch it. That's probably the reason why. But now it's women's football's getting there. I think I don't know what the ceiling would be for it, but no, fair play.
It'd be interesting. yeah, it'd be interesting. What about yourself, Mark? Did you watch much of this tournament?
I did. And my interest grew as we got further. I'm not gonna lie, I mean, it's not something I've been interested in for years and years. I'm not going to pretend that I have. I mean, I'm 44, and traditionally when I was at high school in Allsager, the lads played football and rugby and the girls played hockey and netball. There was no girls football then. And I know it's grown in popularity. I've seen, you know, the teams at uni always had women's teams in rugby and football. And we've started to feature in the last 2 years the Crew Alex women's team on the podcast. That, like, we do a match report and speak to players and the manager and stuff. But I can only echo what David was saying in regards to the standard. Like, the standard in this tournament I've just watched has been unbelievable. The ball retention, the pace of it's improved. And one of the most notable things, I think, when I've watched women's football in the past, without being cruel, it was a bit farcical sometimes, and the goalkeeping was a bit of if the shot was anywhere near on target, it was usually going in, and the games were like finishing 15-12, and it didn't capture it in anybody's interest. And that's not being cruel, that's just being realistic. But it's not like that, you know. I'll tell you the truth, I leapt off the sofa in the quarterfinals and the semifinals, and on Sunday when we scored, I was itching for him to win. And I think it's brilliant that it was live on BBC, so it attracted a massive TV audience, as well as the, I think it was 87,000 at Wembley. And I just hope now that, I mean, Ian Wright, bless him, was very quick to acknowledge that this has got to be a springboard now to help it grow. And I think it's also nice to hear to hear the players on Sunday night sort of acknowledge all the women that have played it for the years that have preceded this, that have helped build up to this when it wasn't as popular, and they've perhaps been playing to non-league grounds in front of one man and his dog. But all that's led up to where we are now. And I think football as an industry, if you like, I don't like calling it that, but that's essentially what it is now, football owes it to those players to use this as a springboard, and you know, hopefully it'll grow and grow in popularity. I'd love to think of a day when Crewe aren't playing and I can rock up at Gresty Road and watch our women's team play. Like, there's no reason why not.
I did watch, we took some of our meerkats, the girls' team called Meerkats, we took them to watch Crewe in the, I think it was it the Counties Cup against Leighton Orient? It was towards the end of the season. It was the first time the Crewe ladies had played at Gresty Road.
That's right, yeah, that's very true.
So we went to watch that, and unfortunately they lost to a goal from pretty much the halfway line that went straight over the keeper that was nowhere near it. And the standard was a million miles away from what we saw with the England team. But the fact that they got to play on the first team pitch, and I think Arsenal have guaranteed that their team will play at least six fixtures on the first team pitch. So, I mean, you can't play too many games, even on modern pitches. But there's a kind of a dilemma. Do you put the ladies, women's teams on the first team pitches and risk having 6,000 people in a 60,000, 70,000 people stadium, or do you keep them in smaller stadiums of 15,000, 20,000, work on filling them and then go from there? And I think that's a kind of debate that's going on at the moment. But to actually having that debate is just a big step forward.
I think it's more important than that. I mean, we're talking about the absolute elite level of women's football. I think what needs to happen is essentially, like, for me as a kid, playing football was fun. That's what you're supposed to enjoy doing it, whether you're any good or not. I mean, I was never blessed with any great ability myself. But, like, if girls want to play football at primary school, then they should be allowed. And high school, and it should just be encouraged and just become normal. So it, like, the next generation that are coming through will be talking about it as if it's nothing new. It's, you know, it's always been around, and they won't believe that, you know, 20, 30 years ago, women's football wasn't a thing. I think that's what's got to happen now. And then hopefully the real talent will rise to the top, and England will carry on winning tournaments.
Yeah, I think one of the things we'll see off of the back of this, like Dave was saying there, you know, whether you can play in front of us in a 60,000 stadium with the level of fandom that they're getting. Hopefully next year, you'll see a lot more people wanting to watch it because of what they've just witnessed. You know, I was in the pub actually when England won it, and that pub erupted. Honestly, it could have been Arsenal winning one of their famous FA Cup games, or winning the league at Old Trafford, or White Hart Lane, one of those many places that we've won the league. It could have been that, because the way that the people were reacting in the pub probably wasn't what you'd have seen in the past. You know, you'd have had the women's game on, in a room, and there'd have been no interest. But literally everybody in the pub was glued to that telly. And hopefully that translates into interest going forward. And I actually think what these women have done for the sport in England, you're going to see the benefits in 10, 20 years' time. I've got my five-year-old daughter telling me she wants to play football because of the basis. You know, she's got no real idea of what's going on. I've talked to her about the Arsenal. She's not shown any interest in that, unfortunately. And neither's my little lad, although I bought him his Arsenal pajamas and he will wear them. He just likes the fact that they're red. But she has got an interest. She knows, she's aware of what's going on, that people are talking about it. She's picking up on it. And she wants to play football just on the back of that. And that's, and like you say, a few years' time, I think that's when you'll see the dividends of what these women have actually achieved. And, you know, the level of expectation when you watch the men's game and how they're going to do in these tournaments, the fact that these ladies have gone and have done that, I think is really, really exciting for the women's game. And hopefully it will bring it on in leaps and bounds just by drawing attention to it, because people are talking about it now. You know, this morning, the girl who scored the winning goal, you know, she was on Good Morning Britain and what have you. I hope it's not just a flash in the pan and people forget about it in 2-4 years' time. But we've got a World Cup coming up against, and obviously the Americans have got a very, very good side. It'd be interesting to see how England can do against them. I mean, bear in mind I'm Welsh and, you know, I'm not that vested in how England do, but it has been fantastic to watch.
Well, I'll pick Tilly up on the 5th of September, about 5:45, and she can come to Wildcats. That's when we start back.
Listen, dude, if you can give me 9 minutes break, I'll take it. She's a live wire.
One little frustration I've had, I don't know what you guys think, but you alluded to it, David, before, around Ronaldo and Pogba and stuff. I really don't like the British press and the British media. They get on my nerves. They seem as if they want to, like, certainly with footballers, Gaz is the classic example. The media build them up into these superstars with all the hype, but then the very same media want to absolutely destroy them when they get to the top and bring them down again. And I've never quite understood that. And, like, the media have been great, obviously, with the pushing that England are going to be in the final. But then I've read far too many articles this week about the comparison in wages and the comparison in standard, you know, and like, obviously you're going to get that England men haven't won anything for however long it is, 50, 60 years, so and the women have done it a lot quicker. And then it's like, yeah, but, and we're comparing already, whether it's wages or standards or lifestyles or support, like, why? It doesn't matter. We don't do it with any other sport. We don't compare men and women's hockey to that extent, or rugby or darts or anything else. So why have we got to focus? Just because we've had a bit of success, it's like, well, we need to start nitpicking now and comparing the two. We don't need to compare them at all. The two separate entities, and let them stay that way.
It's true. The British press is incredibly, incredibly negative. I despise the British press. I despise the press in general, if I'm really honest. But certainly you're quite right in terms of sporting. Like we talked earlier about the likes of Pogba and Ronaldo, you know, and having spoken to people like, say, Neil, who was based at the club, we know the stories about Pogba were completely untrue. But they were there to be said, and they were there to be told, and they just didn't need telling. What we should be doing is talking about what these guys are doing on the field. And actually, one of the things that I wanted to talk about, because, you know, when you talk about people who I was watching, there's Northwest Tonight or Granada Reports tonight, they were talking about the trolling of footballers and the three players that were getting the worst abuse in the Northwest. And Marcus Rashford, Marcus Rashford was one of those players. I love Marcus Rashford because he's somebody who uses his fame and uses his platform to do nothing but good. Yes, some of his performances have been a little bit questionable of recent. But when you look at everything that guy does and actually uses the attention, we talked about, you know, people don't want the attention. This is a guy who's actually thought, actually, I don't want the attention. I don't want the spotlight on me. But if it is going to be on me, then I'm going to do something fantastic with it. And what that guy's done in terms of, like, you know, meals for kids in school, I love him. I love Marcus Rashford. I think he should be put on, you know, he should be put on a plinth in Trafalgar Square, you know, whatever you like. That's how highly I think of that guy. I think he's a fantastic man, and he should be an example to everybody else who plays the sport of just what you can do and what you can achieve when the world is looking at you. You know, you should be very proud to have that guy at your club.
I am. And I think what another problem with the press and fans in general is that they link poor performance with everything else he's doing. And he gets a lot of stick and people say, you're playing bad because of that. Yet studies consistently show that footballers that have other interests that they can focus their attention away from football for periods of time are actually more balanced human beings and therefore play better football. But despite all of that, it's just all ignored. And, oh, you helped to write a book. Oh, you got involved with the Meals for Kids things. And all of a sudden, that's why you're suddenly off the boil. No, he's a professional footballer. He's top quality. And he's had a bit of a bad patch compared to how good he was. All players that burst onto the scene and make a massive difference, get found out isn't quite the right word, but players adapt to then contain them more. So then they have a period of where they're not as effective, and they then have to work out their game a bit more to become effective again. And people just slate him and just draw correlation or causation between one and the other. It's just not true.
No, absolutely. Absolutely.
They're human beings at the end of the day, and the expectations that football fans have of them are just, they're insurmountable. You know, they get criticised if they walk off the pitch and they're smiling and chatting to an opponent that they've just played against. You know, if they nip out for a night out, they're absolutely lambasted in the press. They can't wait to get the photographs on the front page or all over Twitter or whatever. They're just human beings, and football is football is a lifestyle. It has to be, because they're elite athletes, but they're allowed to enjoy other aspects of their life. But you're right, the press seem to want to build them up and then destroy them, and it's unfair, it's ridiculous, and people used to say it sells papers. I mean, I suppose these days it gets clicks and likes and algorithms. It's a strange old world. I've never understood it, and I'm not sure I ever will.
I'm not sure I want to either.
No.
So we're around about the hour mark now. Actually, we've not really talked about the stuff that I planned. We've done left turns without Gaz, and that's quite unusual, because I always thought he was the king of the left turns. He'll be very proud when he listens back to this one. We'll dedicate this one to him in many ways. So we're coming up to the hour mark. I do need to give a quick shout out to our sponsors. So Ollie's Snacks. So if you want your olives, your nuts, your pretzels, or your chocolate-covered pretzels, head over to ollies-ollies.com. Use the promo code TALLBOYRADIO when you're paying for your order, and you'll get 20% off, only if you are based in the UK. And if you do, don't forget to send us a tweet or something and just let us know how much you're enjoying those products, so that we can send it on to Ollie's and say, look, guys, we're doing something for you. So let's say our goodbyes and give our final thoughts then. So who wants to say their goodbyes first? Mark, do you want to say goodbye first?
Yeah, thank you very much again for having me on. I've really enjoyed it. It's been good, because we've talked about stuff I didn't ever expect to, and I've enjoyed it, particularly the bit about women's football. Yeah, so thank you very much for asking me back.
No, it's been a pleasure. We'll have you back again at some point in the future. Again, I planned this episode out. I sat down on Sunday night with my pen and paper, planned it out in front of me, and we've not talked about any of that, as is often the way with Tallboy Radio. Dave?
Just picking on that very point, Adam said, you know, jumping on the podcast, as what any particular subject. Yeah, we're talking about the football season starting. I thought, well, I don't really follow it that much, so I've not got a lot to add. And he said, you know the format of the podcast, you don't really need to know much. So it's been good to talk. You know, it has been football the whole episode, but it doesn't seem like it's been about football. We've not been, you know, slagging off teams and stuff. We've been talking about the background of football and lots of different aspects of it. And as Mark says, talking about the women's game, I think it's quite apt at where we are now, particularly for me. It's a passion of mine. And I think it's been good. I enjoyed it. Cheers.
Cool. Andy?
So it's been like one of the old school Tallboy radios where we actually have a topic and we go off topic, but then it's opened up more episodes in the future. I think, you know, we'd probably talk an hour on women's football. We could talk on different leagues. We could talk on players and salaries or what they do outside of football. I think there's a lot to cram into this hour. I say an hour, it's been just over an hour, but it's flown by. Like, yeah, it's been good.
Yeah, you're right. Yeah, it really has flown by. It's interesting you say that. I thought that myself. I was literally looking at the clock when and I wanted to mention the women's football, and we're like 40 minutes deep. And I thought, wow, I was planning on getting that in much, much earlier with respect to their achievements. So it just leaves it to me then to say goodbye. One thing we all universally agreed on before we started is obviously Everton definitely going to get relegated this year, being the Championship.
down we go.
Yeah, and we'll all be delighted to see it. Happy holidays, guys. Enjoy Las Vegas. Put some money on it, dude, because Delia, they're going down. Yeah. Cheers, guys, for listening, and we'll catch you next week. Take care.
Hey, what's up, everybody? I'm Mike.
And I'm Tabby.
From Happy Hour Podcast.
We are here to tell you about one little thing that we are doing starting at 10 a.m. Eastern Standard Time on August 26th.
We're going to break the world record for the longest recorded podcast. Join Caleb, Tab, myself, our producers, and some absolutely amazing indie podcasters for this event.
We were also lucky to score El Presidente of the Salty Hippo Nation, Gunner, from the legendary Gunner podcast.
We're going to be streaming this from YouTube, Facebook, and Twitch.
Join us in making podcast history. And always remember,
don't text and drive, don't drink and drive,
and always drink responsibly.